Welcome to People Power and Politics, hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. My name is Paul Phillip, Editor-in-Chief of Caribbean American Weekly, Workers World Today, and the Immigrants Journal, and host for People Power and Politics. And we are joined by a very, very special guest, Mr. Jemani Williams, who is currently the public advocate and candidate for governor of New York. Welcome, sir. Good to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Peace and blessing, love and light to you and everyone listening.
Thank you. Right back at you, sir. So, who is Jemani Williams and why are you running for governor of New York?
Well, Jemani Williams is a first-generation American. Parents came from the tri-island state of Grenada, Caracou, and Petite Martinique. I am a public school baby from preschool to master's, educated in the New York public school system. I have Tourette syndrome, ADHD. Always made life kind of interesting. And I'm a community organizer by training. I always say it was before Barack Obama, so no one had any idea what that was. My mother asked me to please get a real job. I had to tell her it was a real job. Then I decided I wanted to run for office, and I ran against an incumbent. It wouldn't be the last time I'd be called crazy for trying to run against an incumbent, particularly with six people in the race. I ran, and I've been trying to cause as much trouble as I could since then on behalf of people whose voices I feel haven't been lifted up. And so I'm proud. People told me that I had to choose between being an activist and an elected official. And I said, I don't. The best elected official are activists. And so we showed that you can have activism and be a productive elected official. When I left the council, I was listed as the most productive council member. I'm proud as public advocate we passed more bills in partnership with the council than almost all the public advocates before me. So it's important to show that you can push back against status quo and still have government work for folks. It's important. It was important to me to be able to show that can be done.
So Mama must be very proud right now.
She probably would prefer that I was doing my first love, which is acting. But other than that.
So she wanted you to be the next Denzel?
Or the first Jemani.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good as well.
When actually, she instilled a lot of this stuff in me. You know, we had to watch Gil Noble when I was younger, the learning and understanding civil rights in this country, particularly Black Americans, and expanding that out to see what the plight of immigrant Americans, the plight of all the folks who are marginalized. It became very real and was important in my household to understand that journey and what it takes. And so she has to know that all of that was instilled in both myself and my sister.
Excellent. So what is your vision as the next governor of New York?
Well, you know, we are in a really important time right now. I keep hearing our leaders, including the governor, say we have to return to normal. And I keep telling them, no, normal didn't work for most of the people who are listening right now. It didn't work for most folks in New York City or New York State. It probably worked for the donors who are donating to her campaign. But the rest of the folks are struggling still. They were struggling before the pandemic with housing issues, with evictions, with foreclosures, with mental health, with food insecurity, people trying to figure out if they can pay for their prescriptions or they can pay for their housing. Public safety was a huge issue then. If we had addressed many of the issues before, we may not be here and as bad as we were. The one vision to make sure is that we lost tens of thousands of New Yorkers. The one thing we could do is not return to normal. And the vision is to have a new normal in New York State, where Albany is actually working for the struggling and working New Yorkers. We have 120 some odd billionaires in the state that actually made $220 billion with a B, more than the budget of the state. They made that over this past pandemic. And those are the folks who are getting the most protection while people are literally struggling from Brooklyn to Buffalo.
They're getting $600 million, right?
Yes. The Buffalo billions. We asked, by the way, for the governor to put in the budget $1 billion for gun violence prevention and for victim services. Very often people will lift up the trauma of victims to push forward very bad policies that don't help anybody. But we find that the victims often need services that they can't afford or can access. Instead of getting $1 billion, we got $1 billion to the billionaire owner of the Buffalo Bills. And so that is a great disparity, and it shows who our campaign is for and who the current governor's campaign is for.
Okay, so we have some concerns, and one of them is inflation. We know that gas prices are going up, and this is just the beginning. As the next governor of New York, do you have a plan to deal with inflation?
Well, you know, there's inflation happening all across the country. Mm-hmm. We have to do what we can here in the state. And really, I always talk about, you know, income inequality, but I think we need to be talking about resource inequality. And so we have to make sure that the resources people need to live healthy and functional lives are at a cost that is very accessible to the rate people are getting paid. We have never, our pay has never kept up with inflation. It's never kept up with the way things cost. So one, we have to make sure that people are paid more. $15 an hour sounds like a lot. One, that's not happening all across the state, so we have to increase it across the state. But two, it's still hovering around the poverty line. And so it's not a good marker. Particularly, we have now surpassed San Francisco as the highest rental market in the entire country. This is while we're having increasing numbers of homeless New Yorkers. While we have, right now, over 200,000 dockets in court for people to be evicted. We have a massive problem going right now when it comes to housing, and the government is not meeting that need. But we have to make sure that people are getting paid more and they have access to the things that money could buy at a rate that's helpful. So whether it is making sure that we're bringing down or assisting with housing costs, we're getting health care for all, including mental health services. We're making sure that broadband is accessible to folks, not just in rural areas of the state, but right here in New York City, there are kids who went to school during the pandemic and didn't have access to the internet, didn't have access to the materials they needed. And so we can do those things too, both raise and elevate how much folks are getting paid and bring down the cost of what it takes just to be a human being in New York State. And I think people understand that they're not better off than they were before the pandemic. And that's important because when I started to run, I said, you know, this governor, I think, is going to be the same of what we always had or worse. Sadly, the past few weeks have shown that it's actually correct what I'm saying. I wish it wasn't because people are hurting, but it is, and that's one of the reasons we're running.
And, you know, talking about people are hurting, Jimmy McMillan said this years ago, and it still resonates today, that rent is too damn high, and rent is projected to increase by 10%. And you did mention about we having the highest rate, you know, even more than San Francisco. How does the Williams administration plan to counter this?
I guess we got to say the rent is even too damn higher now because it's even worse than when Jimmy was here. We weren't the worst in the nation. You know, the community organizing I did was around affordable housing, income-targeted housing, tenants, tenant housing. Did that across the state. So I've been working on this issue for many years. You know, the eviction moratorium, we knew actually had to end at some point. The governor ended it in the middle of the Omicron surge in the middle of the winter, which was the wrong time. She did it without any good cause eviction to help people not be frivolously evicted. And she did it without putting any real program to prevent our small owners from being foreclosed on. But her plan is to build and preserve 100,000 units of affordable housing. The problem with that is that it's not enough for one of the boroughs, much less the entire state. But we have a plan. One, we support good cause eviction. We support getting a real program in to prevent small owners from losing their homes. We also have a plan, and it's a legitimate one, to build and preserve 1 million units over the next 10 years to match the problem we're in right now. We also asked money to be put into this budget for housing vouchers. It was not. We also know that we have to get real money to NYCHA. But also we have to make sure we're dealing with the management problems there. It's a two-pronged approach. You can put as much money as you want. If you have poor management, it's not going to help. And that's, you know, well, we have to talk about housing and homelessness together. People usually talk about it separately. But most folks who are homeless just need housing at the point that they can afford it. But most people in our shelters, a third of them are children. A subset of them are domestic violence survivors. And another subset, which people usually think of when they think of chronically homeless on the street, there's a subset that is substance abuse and mental health issues that they need supportive housing that they can afford. And so there's, depending on who, what population you're speaking to, you have to understand what that population needs and be able to provide that. And right now, we're not doing that at all.
So maybe we should move from, you know, saying affordable housing to low-income housing. This is really what we need.
I try to say income-targeted housing because something is affordable to everybody. We just need income-targeted so people, particularly at the lower end, are getting assistance. Everybody needs assistance right now. You know, be honest about that. You have a teacher, a police officer, a firefighter, and a transit worker. They may not fall in the low-income category, but they need help. And I know if they need help, the folks who are on a much lower income scale need a tremendous amount of help, and they're getting the least amount of help.
Okay. So as the current public advocate, you are familiar with slum landlords. You have a list. The Attorney General has a list as well. And so far, the mayor's office is the only administration, Mayor Adams, that has handled this issue with litigation. So how do you think this issue can be dealt with from at a state level, and what kind of help do you think Albany can afford? Perhaps a legislative perspective. What are your thoughts?
I'm glad that this administration is trying to take a legislative angle. I believe the prior public advocate, Tish James, did try to do some litigation. I'm glad the mayor is trying to do something that way. And the previous public advocate tried. The office didn't have the powers to do the litigation the way mm-hmm. we wanted to. So we keep putting out the list, hopefully to put some public pressure on. We also have a package of legislation that I'm hoping the city council will pass to provide some teeth. I do think ultimately what happens is people should be losing their buildings. But that's at some point. People hold on to these buildings for way too long and not providing the services that tenants need. But on a state level, love to work with municipalities across the state, but of course New York City, to strengthen the powers in a way that's needed to provide teeth to this to these bills and make sure banks understand that not only is their homes not being taken care of, but they shouldn't be lending to these folks. We also have to make sure that these owners are not able to do business with the city. And a lot of times we see people who are bad and poor actors still able to do business with the city, and we have to provide accountability that changes behavior.
Okay, so still on the topic, you know, of housing, and NYCHA has been a nightmare, a living hell. As governor, do you have any ideas for public housing?
Yeah, the state, you know, it's almost all but zeroed out money given to NYCHA. Government on every level has pretty much tried to get out of the public housing business, and we can't do that. So there has to be true investment in NYCHA, and there has to be much better management. Right now, we did a five-borough tour, and it's astonishing what we've seen. It's astonishing of how long this has been going on. Many of the issues that I've said are pre-pandemic, and we just had leaders who have ignored them. These issues are, one of the reasons I'm running is because I've been working on these issues for a very long time. I'm proud of the work that we've done as council. I'm proud of the work we're doing as public advocate. But the tools of the office is something that I think would be so helpful, so I'll no longer have to advocate on behalf. I can just do on behalf.
You can just get it done.
Absolutely.
All right. So New York has a mental health issue, which has led to crime, etc., and the pandemic has certainly not helped. Any specific ideas as governor?
Well, as public advocate, one of the first reports we put out was trying to figure out how we can strengthen the continuum of care for mental health in New York City. And it's the same all across the state. I've been very open about, I've been seeing therapists for the past 7 years, and it's been awesome. It's probably the best thing I've ever done. I probably wouldn't be a newlywed without it, with a brand new baby girl.
Oh, congratulations.
So, thank you so much. So I'm excited about it. I can't imagine not having that access to that and making it through what my wife and I personally went through and what's been going on during this pandemic, much less children and young people who don't have the life experiences to help them navigate these spaces. But we've been very clear, even at the beginning of this pandemic, that we were going to unfortunately see violence go up. Everything was getting worse. Housing insecurity, food insecurity, access to jobs and pay were all getting worse. So we knew what was going to happen. We knew that mental health was a problem. You have adults stabbing people in museums. You have people on airplanes acting out. Suicides have gone up. And some of that is just the adults. Imagine the children. And so we have been very, very insistent that mental health is a huge issue here. particularly in the schools across the state. People are begging for mental health services, but we have to make sure that's there. In every aspect in our life, we have to make sure that people have access to the mental health services they need, a continuum of care, particularly for those who are dealing with acute mental illness. But for the rest of us, we should be able to have a check-in once in a while. Everybody needs a check-in.
Like we do the physical checkup
Absolutely.
Every year.
And then, you know, in our community in particular, these things are not often talked about. And when they're talked about, there's a stigma attached to it. And I think we're beginning to take that stigma down, which is very important. But once you take the stigma down, you also need to have access to the care. And sometimes once you can get past the stigma, you don't have access to the care in a way that other communities do. And so as a governor, I'm keenly aware of that. I want to make sure that changes.
Okay, excellent. So former Mayor de Blasio signed Executive Order 47 in 2019 requiring city agencies to spend at least 50% in community and ethnic media outlets. And, you know, as a minority, we know the importance of these outlets to their communities. Can a similar program be instituted at the state level?
Well, one, I think it's a great goal. My guess is we haven't achieved it. I'd love to find out if that's actually being achieved. My guess is people aren't feeling that. When I was a council member, I worked with Comptroller John Liu. We were actually trying to see if we can do a similar thing. So we have to make sure that the executive order is not in name only and 100% on the state level. We witness now the importance of being able to communicate effectively and quickly during this pandemic in many languages and different cultural ways that people receive their news. We also saw that during the last hurricane that was supposed to be a hurricane, the latest hurricane in the generation, the storms of a century that keep coming, where we couldn't communicate to folks fast enough and people died in their basements.
Mm-hmm.
So one, we just have to make sure we have a better way of communicating people quickly. There are all communities that actually see this happen on a regular basis, and we have to mimic some of that. But second, I mean, we've spent a lot of money on advertising, and we have to make sure that that advertising is going to our ethnic media, because they're the best voices to reach out to people in a language and a culture that they understand. They understand how people receive the information, how they want to receive the information. And if we're not taking advantage of that, one, I just think it's not the right thing to do. But two, we're actually not getting our message across.
Okay, so we can look forward to a Williams administration taking care of the ethnic media.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I have you on record, sir.
100%.
All right, great. So how can one support or get more information for your campaign?
Then go to JumaniWilliams.com. J-U-M is in Mary, A-A, N is in Nancy, E is in Ernie, Williams.com. They can also go to at Jumani Williams on Twitter, on Instagram, at Jumani.Williams, and the same on Facebook. You can sign up to volunteer. Also, you know, we don't take money from the people who are benefiting from these high rents, these foreclosures, and these evictions. The people we're running against, they do. That usually means we're running effective but grassroots campaigns. And so when people can donate $5, $10, $15, $20, it's extremely helpful. What we can do with $1, they can't do with $100. So we saw that when we ran in 2018. People thought we wouldn't even get close. We got 47% of the vote. We outperformed polls by 25%. Similarly, in public advocates race, they had us down maybe third or fourth right before the election, and we won. So we always outpaced the polls. We're always able to make do with a lot of money that might be, because I walk with the Most High. I have a lot of faith, and I'm a faith-based person. So they make magic with that money. But we do need a little bit. So we're asking folks to just, you know, send whatever they can.
And you bring the truth to power.
I absolutely do my best to do that.
All right. So, Mr. Williams, why should one vote for you as the next governor of New York?
You know, we're not, and I hope we don't get this again, because we lost 70-something thousand New Yorkers. So we have an opportunity now to do something better than where we were. New York City became the epicenter of the epicenter because we just had failed leadership. The current governor is a continuation of that leadership. And I think people are beginning to see that now. And there is an alternative. You know, we have to elect people who understand the seat that they're holding is not more important than the people they're representing. That is the type of elected official I have chosen to put forward. I never say I'm holier than thou, because this is a tough game. But I think we've done really good in pushing that. And that's the type of person we need in the governor's mansion right now, especially with rights under attack. The Democratic Party has done a good job of giving a boogie person to vote against, but not lean into a vision to vote for. And we're leaning into a vision for the working and struggling New Yorker. And it's clear that the other vision is really about the people who have been really successful. And I think they've been successful because there's a direct connection of how many people are actually suffering right now.
All right. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
And we look forward to having you back again.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Our pleasure.
People power in politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's people power in politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.